thank you for being a Bump 2 subscriber. In part 2 of my podcast with Nancy Novak, we talk about meeting her husband-to-be while in chemo, her relationship with Rachel Naomi Remen, and the importance of our language and narrative as we seek to define our relationship to the cancer experience. That's a wonderful sentiment. Wow. So how did you meet your husband? Now I'm very curious.
At the dog park.
Oh, okay.
Everybody should have a dog park, even if you don't have a dog, you know, because some of the best people have dogs.
No, it's a wonderful way to meet people. I haven't had a dog for a few years. Maybe I need to reconsider that.
Get a dog. I have two dogs, and I always have two dogs, thinking that that's going to make everything okay. Yeah.
Now, one of the things that you wrote about on your website, I'm just trying to find the quote here. My oncologist saved my body. Rachel saved my soul. Oh, I love that quote. What is it that's so special about Rachel?
Everything. Everything. What is so special? First of all, when you read her stories in these two books, she's eloquent. She just puts things together in a way that it gave me what I needed, and I think it gives millions of people what they need. It's been translated like 41 languages or something. Can you believe it? Rachel is heart and soul, you know, and she embraced me during my experiment, my exploration, whatever you want to call it, and just went right in and just found the space in me that I didn't know probably existed, helped me to really put together, which I think is important for every one of us, to determine who we are in relationship to having cancer. I think I love reading everyone's stories, but sometimes they're not my story. You know, my story is my story. And I think that's what it's a gift we can give ourselves to sort of find out the semantics of it all. As I said earlier, I don't like calling myself a warrior or I fought cancer because that seems adversarial to me. And I thought I had to live with my body. I had to embrace my body. I had to accept my body with all its maybe woundedness at the time. But I needed to work in harmony with it. So somehow for me, that language wasn't my language. But
in addition to language, what else goes into one's relationship with cancer?
Well, I would tell you, and this is all going to sound silly, but it's true, how I looked, how I dressed, you know, how I wanted to present myself, because it was helping me define me. You know, and I was wearing silk pajamas to my infusion room. You know, I had fabulous, cute wigs. You know, I gave parties. And when I heard people give toasts, it sounded like eulogies. I directly addressed that and said, I'm not going anywhere. So no eulogies here. You know, it was just like, I think, because this is an ongoing conversation with my best friends. It's like I represented the will to live. I'm going to live it. I'm going to, you know, so appreciate the people who surrounded me with not tuna casseroles, but their food and their love and their, you know, their participation.
It really does come down to love, doesn't it?
It did for me, yes. It did for me. You know, and I guess what you're going back to the question you asked before, it was my capacity for love that changed. That it was much bigger than I thought it was. And let me put it this, my capacity for gratitude that changed, that I really, I can feel it in my heart as I said that word, but it was just like, I was very appreciative. I am very appreciative. You know, I think people went all out in my behalf, and I acknowledged it. I knew it. Rachel sometimes did an exercise with me, and I do it with other people, and I could share it with your group. I'll send you a link. But it's almost like a meditation you do at the end of the day, to say, to think back on your day and say, what about today inspired me? What about today surprised me about myself? What did I learn about myself? Asking yourself questions at the end of the day, and what inspired my gratitude? I mean, I can't remember exactly the language, but I'll send it on to you if you want to.
Oh, no, please do. That I'd be very interested in taking a look at that.
It's a wonderful way of just reflecting on your own day. And then what I think happened is like you experience, it's not like the end of the day anymore. You experience the gratitude in the moment that it happens, that you feel it. And then you go a step further of being able to express it. And so I think we can live in a different world when they're in that space.
Well, and it goes back to, we create our worlds with our minds, don't we?
So those were some of her gifts. And I love to write about her gifts to me, because they were many and they should be shared.
I think another thing that comes out of an experience like cancer is a greater sense of compassion.
Yes. Well, that's what I mean. It's like, when you're talking to someone who's had cancer, all of a sudden there's a heart connection, right? You just get it. You know where they've been. You know what they think about. You know how scared they are in the middle of the night. You ask, what are you doing to stay calm through, you know, chaos?
You know, it's interesting. There is that initial connection. But one of the things that I've learned is that you don't always connect fully with everybody. And no surprise there. But I think some people are so rooted in denial or not processing the event, it's very hard to connect with them. I remember speaking to one woman who had breast cancer, and she got into this like very monotone voice, and she just would repeat the same things again and again. And she said, I had the best doctor. I had the best this and that. I'm fine. Or it was just this toneless litany of words that she just went through again and again and again. And it's as if she was just stuck and she had never really processed any of it.
You know, sometimes I accuse myself of being in denial because I just didn't accept the fact that the statistics for ovarian were brutal. I mean, I knew nothing about ovarian, obviously, but when people would say, you know, my sister would cry, oh my God, you're going to die, because, and look at the numbers that she just read on the internet. And I said, I'm not dying. I don't have, you know, that's not it. I'm not dying. I have something to do on this planet still, and I'm not done. But I do feel like I just didn't buy into the fact that I could die. I just never, you know, and I think that to me now that feels weird, because I know the numbers, you know, and I know this happens, but I just never, and I think, you know, I hate to say it, but that's probably denial. And sometimes denial, I don't know if that's denial, I'm just talking, but it's like, I wondered about it. I did not think that was my path.
No, I if it is denial, I think it can be your friend. I think focusing on statistics is, I like to be informed, I like to know what's going on, but to focus on statistics or a chance comment that somebody makes can absolutely destroy your will to live. And you can't let that happen. And unfortunately, you're emotionally so vulnerable as you're going through this, the things that people say, particularly people in positions of authority, can have a real impact on you. You had a positive impact from your doctor, which is wonderful, but all healthcare professionals don't always leave a positive impact.
Well, you know, I mean, we're back to Rachel a second, where she wanted to make every doctor into a human being, which is an interesting notion. But there are a lot of smart oncologists out there. Super smart, or they, you know, and God knows why they're doing this work, because it is a work of just, heavy duty emotion.
Yeah.
Heavy duty sacrifice. And I, you know, they don't seem like they have any emotional response to what, when we're sitting there crying in the office or something. They just seem like too cool. But you know what? I say to people, just go with the smartest person you can find. They're all going to be smart. But find somebody you can connect with, you know, you can be authentic with. If you can't be authentic in this process, it's going to be tough.
It is. And finding the right doctor or the right team is incredibly tough. Because you're, on the one hand, you're pressured by time or a sense of limited time, which may or may not be true. And it's expensive.
And you don't know what the criteria is of how to judge, you know.
No.
You have no idea what he's going to be like in the middle of the night. When, or is anyone ever has said to their patient, call me in the middle of the night if you're falling apart.
Well, the reality is, for most of us, medicine's a black box. Somebody can have all the degrees and all the criteria and the CV from, you know, the most remarkable CV, but that doesn't mean they're competent. It doesn't mean they're human. It doesn't really imply anything. It just implies they were very good at school.
Right. 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 And it, each person matches up with it in different ways, you know, so who might be perfect for me? Might someone say, oh, are you kidding? You know, kidding? He just looks like Santa Claus. He's not really Santa Claus.
He did turn out to be Santa Claus though, didn't he?
Always loved it. Always loved that part. Yeah.
So what's ahead for Nancy's list? I mean, you pivoted more towards kids.
Oh my goodness. There are several things I'm thinking about. One thing I'm working on right now is creating a directory of integrative practitioners around the country and actually around the world. We're starting with hoping to get more people around the world, but we're people who work, you know, all healing doesn't happen in the infusion room. There are a lot of other ways that we heal. And I want people to know about that. So getting together, I mean, I think we're close to 1,000 different practitioners around the country who offer all kinds of wonderful services. I mean, whether it's, you know, everything is crazy, it's just fitness programs or nutritionist or whatever, but it's, this isn't always, you know, this is an addition to the Western medicine routine that we're all doing. I'm not saying do this instead at all, because I'm a true believer that you have to have that solid background. But these deepen the healing process. If you really do your yoga or you do your Tai Chi or whatever, and I just want people to know about them and to make contact with them. I want to promote these people because they're hardworking, dedicated people to really helping. So that's a big thing on my project list right now. I also wrote a book with 42 other people living with cancer. They were patients, they were caregivers, they were my siblings. It's called I Am With You, which doesn't surprise anybody because those were my doctor's words. And this is Love Letters to Cancer Patients. And these 42 people are addressing newly diagnosed patients who are just going through that first crazy night that I did and had the good fortune of having a doctor who said, here's my phone number. Just like how you get through the night. In fact, there's a whole section each author wrote about how he got through the night. So it's really putting out a hand and a heart and giving hope and encouragement when we all need it. And I think healing begins the minute you're diagnosed. So I wanted everyone to know you're not alone. We're here and you have our support. And I like that book. It's been we've been putting it in new patient packets in different hospitals and oncologists practices, putting it in the infusion rooms or radiation rooms, you know, it's just something. And all of a sudden you see people walking away with it, which is fine. Nobody can, you know, that's good.
Have you thought about putting it online?
It's part of it is online on my website. Some of the stories are already on there. If you go to the website, which is nancyslist.org, at the top of the menu, I think it says stories, and there's some stories of gratitude, stories of hope, and then this the book, I Am With You. And I've done a number of them. I should put more online. Add that to my job description. It's not hard to do anymore. But yeah, I like that. In fact, I feel like very proud of that. The other thing that I've always wanted to recreate, I did this in California. I had a community call to action to get the whole community to adopt the cancer community. And it was a small, we were San Francisco area. So it's a pretty liberal group of people who feel comfortable doing stuff like this. But we got the whole community to get involved, and the kids would decorate the wards at the hospitals for the kids with Valentines and Christmas greetings and all kinds of stuff. And senior citizens and teens and little third graders would team up to make get well cards for everybody all year long. And rock stars would do concerts to raise money and for these families. And the high school kids adopted cancer families to bring food to them every Friday night, party night, I thought, and to stick around with the family and play games and tutor the kids and do whatever was necessary. People walked the dogs, they drove them to treatment. It was just a community in action, and it was beautiful. And one of the things that came out of that that I would love to redo, but I don't think it's going to happen here, was Nancy's Club, which was for kids. I'd love, if anybody's interested, I would be so happy to help you set this up in your community. But it was an adventure camp for kids who, a club, it wasn't a camp, adventure club for kids who were living with cancer or loved somebody who had cancer. And every weekend we'd have an adventure. We'd go to sporting events, we'd go to museums, we'd go to mostly sailing. We were living on the bay, so we sailed a lot, and the kids loved sailing. It was sort of metaphor for what they were going through, the healing by water. And we just did things every single weekend so they could just be kids and forget about being cancer kids. And it was phenomenal. And they're all alive and well. Most of them had leukemia or brain cancer. And they're all doing well, and I hear from them. And it was just, they became their own support system for each other. And then they all went to camp together in the summer. But it was like 35, 40 kids participated and showed up for everything and got a lot of recognition from the newspapers and such that what we were doing. So it was a great project.
Is it still going on?
No, it's not, because I left there and came to Texas. And I just don't have the connections to make it happen here, but it's something that if other people are interested in, please contact me, because I'd love to encourage you to do it. The kids loved it. The families had their own support teams, you know, wonderful things happened through that.
Thank you for joining us today. I hope you found something in today's podcast that inspires you along your own life's path, because sometimes a bump in the road is actually a portal into a more conscious and meaningful life. You can subscribe to our free podcast at www.bumpintheroad.us or become a premium member to hear the full conversation. Just go to www.bumpintheroad.us for more information and to sign up.